Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio. Welcome to Afternoons with me. I'm Bill Arnold. I hope you had a great weekend. We have flopped the calendar over. It's now July, which is shocking, actually, to think that it's already into the second big month of the summer. I love summer. I love Mondays. And let's get started with a great verse from Romans in chapter 12. Paul says, "For by the grace given me, I say to every one of you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought, but rather think of yourself with sober judgment in accordance with the faith God has distributed to each of you." And we want to grow that faith. We want to take your faith and grow it, make it bigger and bigger and bigger. We're going to take a break. Then my friend and colleague, Patrick Albanese, will join me. Looking forward to a great hour.
It's hard to imagine what life was like 243 years ago when our nation was founded. And change is taking place more rapidly than ever before. But just as the founding principles of our nation still hold, the founding principles of Faith Radio remain true and strong as well. Our mission is to lead people to Christ and nurture believers in their faith. And for over 70 years, we've been sharing the gospel message effectively, winsomely, and without apology. And when the gospel is presented, lives are changed. It's because of God's grace, your prayer, and financial investment that Faith Radio remains a strong voice of truth today. As our ministry grows, now with 17 AM and FM radio signals, thousands listening on the Faith Radio app and our podcasts, plus a vibrant online community reaching around the world, your gift goes farther than ever before. Help us keep the relevant Bible preaching, family-focused teaching, connecting faith to life every day and in the days ahead by joining our support team. Make a gift today online at myfaithradio.com.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could
while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain.
It is Monday, and you know I love Mondays. And why shouldn't I? Because this is the start of a new week, and we all get back to work. And it's great to connect with my friend and colleague, Patrick Albanese, from prestigious West Des Moines. We're going to chat about what went on over the weekend and what we're going to look forward to this week. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I love the Mondays too. And am I like your opening guest for the week?
Yes, you are.
So you're actually kind of easing into the actual workload.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
Yes. So the real reason you like Mondays is you're going, this is some light lifting.
Exactly.
Nothing too heavy. Yeah.
Unlike yesterday, I put together a gigantic barrel of weeds that I pulled, and I discovered a new activity I hate.
Oh my gosh. You know, and weeds, of course, they grow without, I don't tend to them. I don't fertilize.
Right.
And you go out there and I'll get these ones that I have a raspberry patch. And I mean, every day lately out there, I get a fresh bowl of raspberries. It's fantastic. But then I'll go out and there'll be a 5 foot tall weed. I go, how did you, you're taller than my kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just keep coming.
They do.
Just like life, isn't it? You plant the good stuff.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yep,
but the weeds, they show up.
Amen to that.
Yeah, and they'll take over if you don't take care of them.
Well, so. I found a very interesting text that you sent me over the weekend, because I love to process what happened over the weekend with you as we get our week started. And Ari Fleischer probably had one of the best tweets of the weekend.
Yes, I know of what you speak. I know the tweet of which you speak.
Would you like me to read it?
Please read it.
Yes.
I'm looking at it, but it was so succinct. Yeah.
Yeah, you go ahead and read it then if it's in front of you.
Okay. So if crossing the border illegally is no longer illegal, and a lot of the Democratic candidates are saying that they want to, make it perfectly fine to just do that and come on in, and there'll be no ICE and there'll be no processing. Come on in. Why do we make people who get off airplanes go through customs? If it's fair to let people in without going through customs on the border, then everyone everywhere should be allowed in. And I thought, oh my gosh, that's right. You know, isn't it amazing? We make grandma go through pretty invasive security from the TSA. And then they say, well, you know, if we just catch that one stray grandmother, you know, that happens to be carrying something. But you look at the amount of freedoms that we've given up just to get on a plane these days. And we say, OK, fine, you've got to run me through the X-ray machine and hit me with some radiation and take my shoes off and potentially pat me down. And, you know, you got grandma over in the corner and you're thoroughly going through her wheelchair because you think she looks suspicious. But we're not checking people that come across the border. I have a friend who he was a pretty liberal guy up until recently, lives in Los Angeles, and he's fighting tooth and nail right now to try and get the mayor, Garcetti, of Los Angeles recalled because all the people that California has been allowing across the border, they've brought typhoid back. And they're spreading these diseases that we haven't seen in a long time, and it's hitting his neighborhood. It's funny how, you know, something becomes local and suddenly he looks into the alleyway and there are people living there in tents in his alleyway and they're spreading diseases. And suddenly he becomes very interested in politics. It's amazing how that can work. Yeah. So why are we making people go through customs? It's like, you know, I mean, I'm just trying to get to Detroit. That's all.
It's a great point. It's really a good point. I had a friend who went from U.S. to Switzerland on a two-week vacation, and he lands in Switzerland, and they won't let him into the country. You ready for this? Because he only has 6 months left on his passport.
But it was still legit.
Oh, very legit for six more months. But to land in Switzerland, you need to have more than 6 months of time left on your passport before it expires.
Okay, I was in Japan, 25 years ago, and I was staying in this guest house, and there were a bunch of guys from Ireland, which is, you know, there's nothing crazier than trying to speak Japanese to somebody who has an Irish accent. But these guys had been there they were teaching, so they were on a temporary work visa, and they overstayed it by 1 week, okay? And they thought, because their plane to get out was... They had a six-month visa, and they overstayed it by a week, and we get a frantic call on the day they're leaving. They're at the airport, and they are calling back at the house and going, we need somebody. And they were kept at the airport for 24 hours till we could get somebody down there to try and straighten out the situation because they said, you're 1 week over. What's going on here? 1 week.
Yeah.
They were not messing around.
Yeah. Well—
We're pretty lax here.
Well, I know we are. I mean, my friend that ended up in Switzerland with only 6 months left on his passport literally was turned around and put back on a flight and sent back to the U.S. And you can only imagine how disappointing that was to have a two-week vacation plan to Switzerland only to be returned instantly. And I'm thinking to myself, Ari Fleischer's comment is kind of spot on. I mean, we're just, you know, the Democrats would advocate for just letting people just come across the border without any kind of inspection or customs or, you know, just allow everyone in. That's doesn't seem very wise.
And I'm still perplexed by that because there has to be a limit to what you can handle. You know, if you've ever been in a town that and where I used to live in California, we had it was a pretty heavy immigrant population. We had a lot of people from Soviet Armenia. But they tended to own them. I think they owned all the businesses by the time I left. Very savvy people, very savvy. But, you know, it's not just going to change the culture of a town. But if people are a drain on city services in terms of the money that you have to pay for certain things, whether they're welfare programs or what have you, all of that stuff has to be paid for. And eventually you do run out of money. And you have to start, you know, I don't see that we can have a welfare state and pretty much endless immigration and be able to offer these. Well, because the candidates last week in the debates were saying that they would give them free health care. I go, I don't get free health care.
Right.
You know, so you somebody who breaks the law to come here, you're going to give free health care. Cool. How do I get some of that free stuff?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was even Tom Perez, the DNC chairman, was saying, Well, they pay taxes, so it's not a net drain on the system. I thought, well, I pay taxes too, and I still don't get free health care. So how does this magic work? Why would somebody that came here from another country and crossed over illegally be allowed to get free health care that isn't available to me? When we look at what goes on in the news, and you and I happen to have a lot of friends in these high population centers, that maybe that stuff sort of flies with them, but I don't think it flies in little rural America. You know, I deal with a lot of small town Iowa here because my sister-in-law lives in a very small town. I think one guy owns all the businesses. You should see their 4th of July parade. You know, because it's just like one car. It's just one 1972 Pontiac Le Mans that just keeps scooping the loop. And then they go, quick, get the Shiatsu people in there now, you know, right. And then it's the Cub Scout troop. So, you know, that's small town America says we can't do that. You know, I think maybe some of the bigger cities think they can survive it. But I don't know. And my friend in L.A. is not having any of it.
Well, it's a different day and age, for sure. Let's play the role of, I'll give you the Christian view, and you give me the view in the woke era. How about that? All right, here's Christianity, the rules are pretty kind. The exposed sinner, even someone who commits a grave mortal sin, has instant chance of redemption. You repent, ask God for forgiveness, absolution follows, and you start over with other Christians to help you succeed. They switch from condemnation to support, and they're pretty much the same as in recovery. All you have to do is own your addiction and helplessness, make amends, start over day by day, and you will be encouraged, supported, and cheered on by your fellows.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't quite work the same in the woke era. And you can see that just from the way they're trying to take Joe Biden out, that he isn't woke enough. And they're going to saddle him with things that he said 40 years ago, and you can apologize and the apology doesn't mean anything. You know, first they want you to apologize and then they say not good enough and they destroy you. You see what's happened to bakers that won't bake a cake for a same-sex wedding or a photographer. They're not just happy to, make you do it. They want you destroyed. They want you destroyed. If you ask for forgiveness, they say, thanks for the apology. None. No forgiveness. And they will haunt you with it forever. And this is not a tenable situation. Tenable means sustainable, right?
I think so. Yeah. You know, okay. I hate when you use big words.
Duty there? You got anybody with a thesaurus over there?
Ted's got one.
Yeah. Perfect. It doesn't matter. You know, you kneel down before them and they're not only will they not forgive you, they will never forget. And it's frightening to see that people are taking delight in destroying somebody. I mean, I know Mark David Chapman. I believe you interviewed him. Mm-hmm. Did you not?
No, I write letters to him once in a while.
Write letters to you still? Okay. And you know, for the people that don't know that name, he's got a bit of a history, you could say, right?
Yeah.
Am I lying?
He's in the record books.
He's in the record books.
Yep.
Yeah. Literally, records.
Yeah.
Shot John Lennon. And he was a messed up man, and he did discover, he found Christ in prison. And I know a lot of people get very skeptical about that. I include me. Sometimes I go, oh, okay, one of these guys. But he's done an awful lot over the last, 30 years of being imprisoned to try and convert and help others. And you say, are we as Christians, are we supposed to, you know, be open to the possibility that he has fully repented for what he did? Or do we forever hold a grudge? And you and I both know the task on us is not the easy one.
Yeah.
It would be much easier to say, well, you know, John Lennon, he wrote those songs. So I can't forgive this guy.
Yeah.
And he's not asking for our forgiveness necessarily, but what is our duty as Christians?
Yeah. Patrick, let me take a little break. Patrick Albanese is my guest, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. We'll take a very short break and be right back. Welcome back to the show. I've got Patrick Albanese on our Skype line. He is my friend and colleague from Des Moines. And Patrick, before break, we were talking about Mark David Chapman. And he said in a letter to me, he said that he had very severe untreated bipolar and schizophrenia. And basically, a voice in his head told him to go kill a celebrity.
Yeah.
And so he obeyed. He got on a plane and flew to New York to do that very thing. And he has a powerful, powerful ministry behind bars, and he has led many, many and discipled many, many to Christ. And the guy's got just a heart of gold. And he said he was just absolutely a complete untreated chemical mess back then.
We have a lot of that. In fact, you sent me an article just the other day, and it shouldn't be a surprise to any of us, but the fact that we have a rampant, well, I think that the article was highlighting a lot of suicide, of course, but that stems from a mental illness. And it seems like we're missing the boat, and where it's a big mess out there. We see it with alcohol and drug addiction, but I think some stuff gets, like bipolar. That used to be manic depressive, right?
I think so.
Yeah. You hear those terms and you want to dismiss them sometimes. You go, it just sounds like a made up thing, until you meet somebody who struggles with it. And then you say, oh my. You know, if you ever, you've had manic depressive friends or bipolar, they call it.
I have.
Yeah. And they are two different personalities. And there's hopefully something that can be fixed with, you know, medication if it's a chemical imbalance. But you realize they're really hearing things, you know.
Yeah. Now, you've got an opinion of Kamala Harris, why a Democrat might be for forced busing but against school vouchers.
Yeah. So, you know, she really tried to take Joe Biden out on the debate the other day, and, you know, his old things that he had said 40 years ago, and that he was against, you know, the forced busing, which, by the way, anybody who lived through that or knew people that did knew that almost everybody was against it. Imagine moving to a neighborhood and we chose our house based on a lot of factors, but the school district was one of them. The school and the school district. And my mother-in-law, who was a former teacher, said, yeah, you can live there. She would redline areas for us. You can't live there. Nope, kids can't go to school there. So imagine you move right next to a school, and then somebody says, nope, we're going to take your kids. We're going to bus them an hour away and put them in a school that is underperforming because that's fair. So Biden was against it. He didn't think that was a solution. And Kamala Harris has now decided that she's going to, beat Joe Biden with this issue, and has actually come out and said that she's for forced busing. I don't see where this goes. Now, you would say, well, how come all the Democrats are always against vouchers like school choice? And I'm just throwing a theory out there. You know, the idea behind school vouchers is they help every kid. Every parent gets to make a decision as to the school they want their kid to go to when they have the vouchers, even if it's a private school. But the forced busing means the government's in control of who goes where, and they want that control. Not to mention, they get to punish success. So if you happen to have been a family that worked hard and was successful, was able to buy a home and live in a nice area with a nice school district, they get to take that away from you and say, well, your kid's not going to be going there. We'll be taking your kid to the inner city where violence breaks out. And you say, well, we moved away from the inner city for that. So again, it's yet another government control thing, taking choice away and punishing success. Again, just a theory.
Yeah. Now, you had another theory about the income gap. Talk about that.
Yeah, so they talk about the income cap that's growing, and I don't think they're doing fair math. So let's say that, X number of years ago, somebody made $30,000 a year, and then the rich person made $100,000 a year. So there's a $70,000 income gap. And in a period of time, both of their incomes doubled. So now the $30,000 person is making $60,000, but the $100,000 guy is now making $200,000. Now, instead of saying that the income gap percentage-wise is the same, they say, look at that giant gap now. why the gap is $140,000. It used to be $70,000 per year, but now the income gap is twice as big because they're just going by raw numbers, not percentages. I just think it's an unfair comparison because what we should be looking at is, well, you know, you can't make everybody earn the exact same thing. We should be looking at the $30,000 guy saying his income doubled. That's a good thing. How do we keep that going? So the other guy, you know, so his income doubled. I mean, when you're having a good year, do you care what other people are making?
No.
You know, if somebody says, well, you know, Bill, looks like a pretty good year, but I got to tell you that Bill Gates did just a little bit.
Yeah.
A wee tad.
Why'd you have
better
to pick Bill Gates? You know?
I'm looking for the closest comparison for the income bracket I find you near.
Okay, good. Well, then it's a fair deal.
We're getting into this class warfare thing, and they're saying, the CEO of Home Depot makes 2,000 times the average salary of his lowest paid workers, and you get into all this craziness. You say, well, okay, but Kevin Durant, does he still have a job?
I think he's got a job. I think he does.
I think he did okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, how much more does he make than the person who sells popcorn in the aisles? Well, these are not fair comparisons. And have you noticed whenever they're doing these things, by the way, they don't bring in athletes or TV and movie stars?
That's right.
They never, ever complain about industry people,
mm-hmm.
entertainment people, because for some reason, the guy that works 26 weeks a year for $1 million an episode of a TV show, he's fairly compensated. But the guy that runs Home Depot that employs, I forget how many tens of thousands of people and runs that organization, he's not deserving of, his $23 million a year.
Yeah, it's like actors that are most mad about gun violence also work in an industry where it's most glorified in their industry.
Yeah, and yeah, I've known a few guys that, hit well enough where they made, good money, and they would always talk about raising taxes, but I always sensed that it was partly because it was a way to call off the dogs.
Yeah.
It's like, because if you go out there and you say, okay, I made, $20 million last year, I think the best thing to do to make sure that nobody wants to, attack me is say, I think we should raise taxes. Absolutely, we should raise taxes. In the meantime, they're calling their accountant saying, hide it all.
Right. Right. Patrick, we just have about 30 seconds left, and President Jimmy Carter was critical of President Trump while he was overseas. I guess that's one of the written rules, is you don't criticize a president when he's offshore. Is that something he can take back? It's too late, isn't it?
It's too late. Jimmy Carter's been wrong about a lot. And, I think it's kind of funny. I don't even think Trump responded to it. I think he's just to the point, it's just, you're Jimmy Carter. You mm-hmm. had one term, it ended disastrously, and you said the government of Venezuela had the best, fairest run elections anywhere in the world. And look at Venezuela now. So maybe he's letting his record speak for
him. Yeah. Well, have a great 4th of July. Best to you and your family. I will talk to you again soon.
Thanks.
Yep.
See you then.
Patrick Albanese has been my guest, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines. We'll take a short break and be right back.
Paycheck is getting lighter, but I'll take it a day at a time.
Welcome back to the show. I love God moments, and I had one about a week or so ago. My friend and co-host of Real Recovery, George Fraser, was at the health club and ran into my guest, who is on our studio line, and he had mentioned my name. And unbeknownst to him, I had sent him an email 20 minutes later inviting him to the show. And he had no idea. But I love the way that works out. I've been wanting Larry Julian on the show for a while. He is a best-selling author, speaker, and coach who helps CEOs, entrepreneurs, and small business owners lead with their faith and values. He's written a couple of books. He's got a new one out called 5 Bold Choices, Rise Above Your Circumstances, and Redefine Your Life. Larry, welcome.
Yeah, it's great to be on the program.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was really a God moment because I was thinking, I got to get Larry on the show. I've been thinking about it. So I send you an email, and 20 minutes prior to that, you had a conversation with George, who's does the weekend show with me, and we had not talked at all.
know. I tell you, that was initially that was weird. And then I'm going, oh, my goodness, what a God moment.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, I do, too. I really love those. Congrats on your new book, Five Bold Choices, Rise Above Your Circumstances and Redefine Your Life. I'm intrigued.
Yes. Well, Five Bold Choices, actually, I co-authored that with a gentleman named Jay Coughlin, who was the CEO of Lawson Software here in Minneapolis. And he had an amazing story in which it was a little scary, but he was drinking and driving. He was hunting with his dad, and they were driving home, and he hit a parked train going at 60 miles an hour. And unfortunately, his dad died, and Jay survived, but as you would say, he would be in a world of hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wrote this book because he wanted to tell the story of he was at his absolute worst, lowest, but he had this second chance. And from that, he came to faith, and he's now living a life of significance. And it was a great story to share with him.
Yeah, now you have a ministry to, particularly, I shouldn't say ministry, unless you want to call it that, to business leaders, whether they're longtime CEOs or emerging business leaders. You're helping them put their faith and their business and their values and their family all together.
That's correct. Yeah, so that's, my latest venture, which has been such a blessing. I've been doing, the CEO Roundtable started with senior leaders and CEOs about 20 years ago when I wrote my first book, God is My CEO. And what evolved over the years is, 5 years ago, it's like here we have these senior leaders, but what about the next generation leaders? And of course, all these guys, we're all getting older. And then thoughts.
Speak for yourself, Larry.
That's right. I'll speak for myself. Let's put it this way. We're getting older, and the deal is all this. Whatever we have is God has given us, whether it's wisdom or what have you, it's really not about us anymore. We need to pass that on to the next generation. And in today's world, it's extremely important. So 5 years ago, we then formed the Emerging Leader Roundtable, which are younger guys in their 30s and 40s. And, just creating a mentorship type of a situation where, you have an open discussion on the things that, the things of life and the tough things of life that typically men do not talk about. It's usually about getting ahead and making money and making a name for yourself. But what does it really mean to serve the Lord, be a good husband, be a good helper, be a good friend, be a good dad? And so we look at the big picture on how you just live out your faith in a world today that is just so a bottom line world.
Yeah. Larry, safe to say that there is an imbalance for many who go into the business world with guns blazing, wanting to be number one and wanting to earn as much as you can and grow the business as much as you can. And then you wake up one day and go, uh-oh, family's not doing as well as they should.
Correct. Absolutely. And a lot of these guys, if we look back, there's a level of regret. And at the time, I think this is for all people right now, but I think, I don't know how to put this, but the world does us a disservice in that there's so much pressure to produce and to, I get it. You want to earn a living. You want to be successful in business. I totally understand that, and you should. But it's very difficult to have all the plates spinning in terms of how do you be that best husband and how do you be the best wife and how do you, all those aspects come into play. And so how do you really integrate them? How does it honor the Lord? And then how do you balance it in a world that just takes you off balance all the time? And so you need to have some sense of priority to do that. And that's why these roundtables are so important. You need to take time to think through it, and you can't do it alone.
No, we were never intended to do stuff alone. We're intended to process with one another.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, Larry, I'd love for my audience to just get to know you a little bit. I want to hear about, you know, how you grew up as a Jewish kid in Brooklyn, how you came to faith.
That's right. I mean, I love how the Lord has a great sense of humor.
That I think here he does.
I become a speaker, and I talk to, you know, Christians, and of course, and especially in Minnesota. And, you know, I always really start out is like, how does a Jewish kid from Brooklyn, New York, wind up sharing their faith to Christians in Minnesota? And I typically have, you know, entitled my talk, you know, my journey from corned beef on rye to tater tot hot dish. You know, it's like the Lord has a great sense of humor.
Yeah.
But, you know, the quick answer when people ask, how did that happen? And I usually say two words, fear and pain. That's what brought me to the Lord. You know, I had been in the hotel business, started right out of Michigan State in hotel school, corporate trainee, worked my way up the ladder, and sales manager to director of sales. And, you know, I went through a period of getting fired several times for various reasons, whether it's political or not, because it was all in sales and marketing. They either promoted you or you got fired. You either moved up or moved out. Mm. And that was the world in which there was that creative tension. But in the early 1990s, I had this perfect storm of dealing with severe back pain because of the stress that I had, getting fired, going through a divorce, and where the world was crumbling down. And, you know, I was looking for I wasn't looking for Jesus. I was looking for a way out of the pain. And basically, I was searching, and I had been going to, I got introduced to going to a church, learning about Jesus intellectually. But on that day where everything crumbled and I got fired and I was living by Lake Harriet, sun was setting, I just was laying on my back and, you know, doing one of those prayers with, Lord, if you're there, I'm ready to go. I was like Wile E. Coyote on the cliff with the fingers, you know, and it's like, I'm ready to drop, and if you're ready to pick me up, I'm ready to go. And that's what happened. And then it was, for me at least, it was a first ever. This is the first time I ever felt peace and the sense that there was nowhere else to go but up. And from that standpoint, you know, my life changed. And then it went from the, you know, the business into this calling to, you know, integrate work and faith because, you know, where is Jesus in the middle of this? And making a long story short, exactly at that same time, in that time period of about a year and a half, I started to facilitate these CEO discussion groups. There was this young guy that was ministering to corporate CEOs. And after I got fired, I was working as kind of like as a facilitator. That's what I was good at. And I was facilitating these CEOs. And the revelation came was I was facilitating it where they could pray to God on Sunday, but Monday through Friday, they walked into an entirely different culture. And from that is where I felt I need to write this book called God is My CEO, where it helps people answer that question. How do you live your faith in a bottom-line world that demands very opposite results? And that started the journey into a new life. And that's what I've been doing ever since.
It's a fantastic story, Larry. And when you think of the cutthroat bottom line world of business, how can we bring our faith and our relational love for our fellow workers into that environment when there's so much at stake in the business?
That's right. And, you know, that's an absolutely great question because a lot of people say, well, what do? And do you have to go and share the gospel or, you know, you don't shove a Bible in their face or anything like that. And the quickest answer that I give to people, and it's a hard thing to do, but I say, let who you are speak for what you believe. I mean, when you walk into any situation, whether it's business or anywhere in life, you really are a true representative of Jesus Christ. And, you know, it's not easy. It is, you know, this is not a Pollyanna thing, but I do believe it's the right thing to do and that you need to be able to, you know, I talk about, you know, I go back to Deuteronomy, you know, where Moses is posing, I've got life and blessings, death and curses. They're ready to cross the Jordan, you know, go to, you know, find the promised land. And he says, now choose life. And as difficult as it is in today's world, I love the three words, now choose life, right in the present, We have the freedom to choose, and let's choose life. And under everything that we learn about Jesus in the Bible, it's now choose peace, now choose courage, now choose honesty, whatever it is. It's the small choices, day in and day out, that not only direct where you're going, but it has an impact on lives that you have no idea. The smallest of responses in whatever situation, whether it's a bottom line world or in your family. So that's, I think, is a very big defining moment for all of us. And sometimes it's the smallest things that we do that have the greatest impact. And just trust the Lord with that. Just showing up is half the battle.
Yeah, those are great words of wisdom, Larry. Now choose life. And then to be reminding everybody that sometimes it is the smallest acts of kindness and the smallest gestures that go the longest way.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, I advise people, and especially young people, and they say, well, how do I get ahead in business and in a cutthroat world? And, you know, actually, in an ironic twist, I tell them that if you could be people, the most bottom line people will hire you if you provide value to them. So how do you provide value to them? Well, if you're being the guy that is more of a collaborative guy than a competitive, you know, where it's competition within, you know, where it's creating conflict, if you could have that integrity and honesty, if you could produce results by being determined and the things you do it in the right way, you're producing, you are creating value for an organization. And so just become valuable people by following Jesus. It actually works.
Yeah. Would that apply, Larry, to someone who is not in the job they want or they're not in the career that they desire and they would really like to do a change of jobs and careers? Would you be saying that to them as well?
You know, that's a wonderful question because a lot of people, they do get stuck in jobs that not necessarily the best jobs. I will say this from a big picture. God has given us unique gifts and talents. And I think it behooves every individual to find out what those gifts and talents are. And most often, they're hidden. They're hidden talents and hidden blessings within you. And you need to find out. And part of that is taking a risk. And I would raise my hand to this where, I'm notorious of I'm a safe, you know, if I was the guy, you know, when Moses is saying, you know, look, you know, be courageous and strong, right? And, you know, I would be, well, you know, it's a dry heat out here. It's not too bad out here. I don't mind, you know, yeah. Let's the most go. But I think that to answer your question, there are times where, yes, you're in a job, you need to earn a buck, you need to earn a living, and you're in it. And you're not enjoying it. So I get that. And there are certain times where you need to just, you know, you've got to earn a living. But I would urge people to find and understand that the true calling is, and it could very well be at work. And it could very well be, and it takes risks. But I think God gives us an entrepreneurial spirit. This is a perfect for anyone. Where sometimes you venture forth. For me, that's the thing that happened. I got fired. I couldn't work. I was kind of forced into becoming an entrepreneur because of my back, and I couldn't even look for a job. And it was risky, but it's been a blessing. And so I kind of err on the side of be courageous and strong.
Yeah.
I understand the reality of it up. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you want to be doing something that you enjoy. I would encourage people to find it.
I agree. Larry Julian is my guest. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, lots more with Larry. I was not gone long. Larry Julian is my guest. We're chatting about his work and his life passion to help CEOs and entrepreneurs balance their work life and their faith life and their family life all out together. His latest book that he has written is called Five Bold Choices, Rise Above Your Circumstances and Redefine Your Life. He wrote it with Jay Coughlin. I know Jay as well. And Larry, I'm just curious, as I'm looking at some of the five bold choices, in one of your bold choice, you talk about the burden of busyness. And I think all of us, to some degree, suffer from that.
Yes. Yes. You know, it is. It's an ill of our society. And it's one of these things in which if we get caught up in it, we become, I hate to say obsolete, but ineffective at best and potentially obsolete, because the busyness of life, activity is I don't know, it just seems to be persuasive or pervasive in our society. And, you know, I oftentimes go the opposite direction. And as an example, I start out the day before I do anything. I'm just alone with God and just trying to get very, very focused on what truly is my purpose. You know, what is my priorities for today? And just being responsive in the day. And I just think we live in an invasive world. I'm sounding like an old codger here, but I mean, if you think about it, with today's cell phone, if you look at where it is, it's invented. Every time there's a ding, and I'm distracted. We just are so distracted. And so, how do you stay focused on what really matters? And I don't know. I would just encourage people to take a hard look at what really matters most. Try to stay focused on the path that you are, and not let the busyness of life derail you from what you're truly called to do. And yeah. I'm talking about not just in life, but just each day.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're spot on. Okay, another bad choice is accountability. I mean, not having it, I'm sure, is the focus of that. But you talk about going from the fear of failure to embracing failure. I'd love for you to say more about that.
Absolutely. You know, just recently, I had the privilege. I'm very excited. It's coming up in the fall, but I'm giving a keynote to graduating seniors. The seniors graduating from a business school, and I'm very excited about that. And so they give me the opportunity. What's the one thing I would share with someone entering into the business world? And I went back and I started to think. I'm at Lake Minnetonka, I'm in prayer and saying, what would be the most important thing that I would share? And what came up and what I noticed, I graphed out how did I get from there when I graduated Michigan State to here over 50 years. And I recognized that all of my successes came from some failure. So I defined my talk, failing my way to the top. And I mean, it sounds tongue-in-cheek, but that was the truth. It was a revelation to me that my success, it was born out of my failure. And what happened was, with each failure, I was humbled. And that's different from saying I had humility, because I didn't. But I was humbled, and when I was humbled, God had my attention. And in that state is where I did my best work. And so, you know, in the area of just being accountable to the Lord and to others and to life, you know, I just think that it's so important to, you know, from a standing point, just an awareness and just being humbled to see what's in front of you. And, you know, being accountable to who you are and how you've been called, and recognizing that is an extremely important thing.
Mm-hmm. And in one of your chapters, you talk about change yourself, change your destiny. And
correct.
So there's some work that we all need to do, isn't there?
There is. And so just take as an example, relationships, whether it's with your spouse or with the children or whoever, a friend or whatever. And typically people say, well, if they would change, then everything would be okay. And the reality of it is that you really do need to change yourself first in whatever venture, whether it's a relationship or the way that you view things. That's where it's so important to, it's a starting point. And it's that point of humility. And that's when you start to listen and learn and grow.
Because, Larry, you talk about this in your book as well. The battle is within. That's where we have the biggest problem is when we look in the mirror in the morning, huh?
It really is. I mean, you know, and I think, who is it, Joyce Meyer, where she had a book called The Battle of Your Mind. And I totally, I mean, I'm so in agreement with that concept because, you know, as James Allen said, we are what we think. Mm-hmm. And we become what we think. And so what do we, you know, and our thinking create those actions and behaviors, and those behaviors have consequences. And so it goes back to what I was saying earlier about now choose life. And when Moses said, you know, I present to you death and destruction, blessing and curses, now choose life, it seemed like a no-brainer. It's like, well, duh. I mean, I'll choose death for 50, Bob. You're not going to do that, right?
Yeah.
But we do it all the time. I know I do. I will choose to worry about something. I will choose to not be bold because I fear about, you know, the risk that things would take. And I'd rather choose being courageous. I'd rather choose being strong. So the Lord gives us freedom to choose and think and decide, which is such a blessing. And we just need to trust Him. And sometimes we just don't.
Yeah. Well said. Larry, what are some discoveries you've made working with CEOs and emerging CEOs? What are some of the things you've learned about where they're at in life that have surprised you? Or does nothing surprise you?
Maybe not surprised, but maybe affirmed why I actually feel a little better about myself.
Okay.
Well, for starters, The one big thing that I learned is everyone, we are all, us humans are just, we are filled with mistakes. We're human, right?
Yeah.
But we never like to show our humanness. We never like to show our soft underbelly. It's just not who we are. And society says, don't show your soft underbelly because, you know, you're going to get burned for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the higher you go, the greater your desire to never show that. And really, the big revelation for me is when you're truly honest and you share it, it's amazing how not only it inspires others. And so the interesting thing, so God is my CEO, where I interviewed 40 CEOs. The secret sauce behind this book was the humility or the vulnerability that a CEO shared at their lowest point. And I get it because people are going to say, well, I'm just a regular Joe. I can't connect with the CEO. But when the CEO goes, I feared, I screwed up, I can't believe I did that. And then they give, you know, how the Lord helped them. That encourages others. And so that's the revelation for me, is that all these years where you're trying to cover up something, that if you can create a safe atmosphere for people to just get real, I mean, give us a break. Life is too short. And I'm not talking about singing Kumbaya. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about just be honest. And that's what courage is about. It's not having this, you know, Charlton Heston crossing the Jordan. You know, it's different. You know, it's everyone.
Yeah.
You know, just being vulnerable and being honest, and people will respect it.
Plus, it seems like so few people know the whole Kumbaya song. So
that's right. They should at least practice. You know?
Right. Larry, thanks for coming on and doing the show. Larry Julian has been my guest, and his website is Larry. And then Julian is spelled J-U-L-I-A-N, LarryJulian.com. It's been a delight talking to you, Larry.
Hey, thank you so much. It's been a blessing to be on your show.
Yeah, have a great 4th of July, and I'll talk to you again soon.
All right, you take care. God bless.
Yeah, thank you so much. Well, thank you so much to Larry. We're going to take a little break, and I'm looking forward to hour two. We're going to have Ken Samples on from Reasons.org. Ken is a theologian and a philosopher, which means you can ask any question you want. Maybe there's something you've been struggling with. We'll take a short break and be back with Ken Samples. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.